Blog Talk Radio.
The Dolly McCarthy Show is proudly sponsored by North Fork Farm, located in rural Oswego, Illinois. North Fork Farm is family owned and operated since 1961. It was originally owned by former U.S. President Polk. North Fork Farm offering services for weddings, parties, and corporate events. Contact North Fork Farm at 815-768-5400. Tours are available by appointment. Check them out on the web at nforkfarm.com. Bricconi's, it's the kind of food your mama wanted you to eat. They're a small business that's family-owned and operated. Check them out at, or you can call them at 630-717-9530. I was just about to say their website, but I was told you don't say the www anymore. Bricconi's.com. Naper Settlement, another proud sponsor of the Dolly McCarthy Show for the past, almost 7 years now this year, guys. 2020, we're celebrating 7 years of the good show. Thanks to our friends over at Naper Settlement in Naperville, Illinois, where history comes to play. Check them out on the web at napersettlement.org. Sullivan Steakhouse offering guests a unique steakhouse experience with delectable food, fun cocktails, and swinging live music, enticing guests to untie, unwind, and uncork. Check out SullivanSteak.com. Arthur Murray Dance in Naperville and in Oak Brook. They didn't invent dancing, just the best way to teach it. Give them a call and mention the Dolly McCarthy Show, and your first dance lesson is absolutely free. That number to call at Arthur Murray Dance is 630-355-6240. And Midwest Coach Limousine, they're a family-run company led by an experienced and knowledgeable staff. They take great pride in providing you and your guests safe, fun, and affordable transportation. Visit them online at mwc.limo. You can call them at 331-903-0088 and book a vehicle from their luxury fleet of sedans, SUVs, limousines, party, and coach buses. Everybody, you've reached the good show. This is the Dolly McCarthy Show. I am your host, Dolly McCarthy. Thanks for tuning in. Yep, it's now the first show of 2020. Did y'all have a good holiday? I know I did. And I've seen a lot of merriment on social media around town and in and around Chicagoland. It's been a wonderful season, an easy season, not much snow. And just a lot of giving and love and laughter and good times. So I hope your holidays were very merry and fun, and your new year is off to a great start. We are turning a page. We're now lucky number 7, year 7 of the Dolly McCarthy Show. I can't believe it's been 7 years of this. So much has changed, and yet so much remains the same. We're still here, plugging away. We always want to feature non-for-profits in Chicagoland. So if you are a non-for-profit or you know someone who's doing extraordinary things in our community, making it a better place to live, work, and play, please reach out to me and let me know. I'd love to talk to them. Every week, we have good guests, good news, and at least one good laugh. I always promise you that one. It's always on my account, right? And I do welcome your calls. We try. But we have a short show. A while back, a few years back, I was told to shorten the show, we'd get more downloads. So I figured if I could reach more people, shorten the show, as long as I'm reaching more people and getting the good word out, that's my priority. So it is indeed the good show. What's the good word? What good things are happening in your life? I want to hear from you. Send me a message on Facebook or Twitter. I'm on Instagram an awful lot, so I'd love to see you on there as well. And tell me what's good. What's the good word? I'm getting my tongue twisted here. We have a really good show for you today, but first, a couple of announcements. Winter Music Fest is happening in Park Ridge over at the Harp and Fiddle on Saturday, February 29th. We're getting the word out now. Put it on your calendars. It's at 7 o'clock, Saturday, February 29th. Ron Herrick, the Dan Houlihan Band, Mick Bradford, and the Double Digits will be there. It's a music festival. We're celebrating leap year. We're going to make some magic happen for people in need in the Park Ridge community. This is all through the Park Ridge Newcomers Club. Their Labor of Love Gala is happening on May 9th. So this is one of the festivities leading up to it. And Park Ridge Living, the Dolly McCarthy Show, is proud to sponsor. Actually, Park Ridge Living is one of the marquee sponsors. We're really proud to be a part of this fundraiser, making a difference in the lives of those in need in Park Ridge here in their local community fest. This is Winter Music Fest. You can buy tickets on Eventbrite. They're only $40. It includes three bands of entertainment. I can't think of a better place to be than in an Irish pub with live music. I don't know about you. Maybe I'm the minority, but I think this is going to be an awesome time. Free appetizers and two free drinks. Well, you pay it. That's part of your $40 ticket, I should say. Shout out to the Harp and Fiddle, Tito's Homemade Vodka, Pennyville Station, Alpha Graphics, Park Ridge Community Bank, the Dolly McCarthy Show, and Park Ridge Living for sponsoring this year's Winter Music Fest, I should say, as we get ready for the big Park Ridge Newcomers Club Labor of Love Gala on May 9th this year. For more information, you want to check out their website, parkridgenewcomersclub.org/labor-of-love. Check it out for more information on all of that. And tonight, if you're not doing anything tonight, or maybe you do have plans, maybe you're already planning to come to Harp and Fiddle. tonight we have our Ireland information night. I told you about our Ireland trip. I almost said Irish trip. Our Ireland trip in September. What a good crack that was. And we're doing it again, only this time you have 11 months to prepare. We're going November 1st through the 8th, 2020. Very special year. The 7-year anniversary of the Dolly McCarthy Show. This is an incredible tour. Declan Stapleton, the owner of Harp and Fiddle, and I have put together the ultimate can't-miss trip to the Emerald Isle. You're going to get to Galway. We're going to first go to Dublin, of course. Head over to Galway, Aran Islands, Cliffs of Moher, Dingle, Ring of Kerry, and so much more. We're even going to go and attempt to kiss the Blarney Stone, which I missed, by the way. In September, I tried to reach back and kiss it, but I was frightened. I thought I was going to fall. Plus, I had a sore shoulder. Find out later that I had a torn rotator cuff. So I'm going to make another attempt in 2020. Will she be able to do it? We already have the gift of gab on this show, don't we? I hope you could join us. Tonight was just an information night. I'm going to throw out some free appetizers for you. And the first five people that show up are going to get a free Guinness on me if you want it, or I'll get you a Coke. No peer pressure there. But find out all about this trip tonight at 7:30 at the Harp and Fiddle in Uptown Park Ridge. Aaron Gobra, here we go. Okay. We have a great show for you. We have in our second half of the show, Louis Dybel. He is the author of a book called 20 Years on the Gold Coast. Louis worked in Chicago's finest hotels for the last 20 years. And he's got stories about lots of celebrities. So we're going to dig in to that, the life of the rich, the poor, the famous, and the infamous. It might be the funniest thing you'll ever read all year. So tune in for this interview with Louis, 20 Years on the Gold Coast, shortly. But first, I'm really thrilled to have on the show, back on the show, Julie O'Sullivan, who's the Director of Creative Arts and Marketing Manager for Misericordia, everybody's favorite charity, Misericordia, Heart of Mercy. Many of you already know, headed over there, located at Rogers Park neighborhood of Chicago, and it's home to over 600 children and adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. They provide programs for over 200 families in their outreach program, And if you don't know it, Misericordia has become a national model, providing a full spectrum of care, as well as offering, you know, residential placement, employment opportunities, therapy, and recreational programs. Julie's been with Misericordia for over 17 years. She's been on the show before, and we're really glad to have her back on the show to talk about a bakery, sweets. Julie, are you there?
This is Chris, actually, filling in for Julie.
Oh, Chris. Okay. Okay, folks, I was just building up Julie. But Chris, well, welcome to the show. Tell us about yourself. What are you doing at Misericordia? This is a nice surprise.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So I run our off-site, our off-campus retail bakery and gift shop in Glenview. And
yeah,
I've been with Miz about
almost
9 years.
The Sweetheart Shop.
That's right.
The Sweetheart,
yeah, the Sweetheart
Shop in Glenview. Now, you're celebrating your 1 year, right? Anniversary?
Yeah, we just passed the 1 year mark with the shop, yes.
Mm-hmm. So how has it been? I always get over to the shop in Rogers Park, but this is something new. How has this worked out for you guys?
Yeah, so far we've really been well received by the community here. You know, Misericordia is pretty well known name wise in Chicagoland. So moving in here, the community was very accepting and welcoming, and we've done pretty well so far.
Well, fantastic. So tell us about the shop. Where exactly it's located in Glenview, and what kind of offerings do you have in there?
Yeah, so the shop is at 989 Waukegan Road in Glenview. Like you said, we opened up a little over a year ago. And one of the main reasons we did that, like anything that Misericordia does, we do things to fill a need that we see. And one of those needs for us being, as our numbers and our campus grows, to provide more meaningful job opportunities for our residents. So right now the shop has 12 adults that is employed through the shop with developmental disabilities, as well as that's also providing more job opportunities for residents on campus. So our main bakery has about 100 residents employed with them. So it's really brought those numbers up, which is something that we're really trying to do. So in the bakery we have, you know, anything from cookies and sweetbreads, sandwich breads. We have some lunch items, some really nice gift items from jewelry, resident artwork, all kinds of different things, hostess gifts, as well as we can do birthday cakes, anniversary cakes. We do a lot of wedding favors with our brownies and cookies. So really kind of everything under the sun.
Fantastic. And there's are all the people that are working in the bakery, are they residents of Misericordia or not necessarily?
So we have about 12 residents who work with the shop. And then other than that, our shop is mainly staffed by volunteers as well, who, you know, give so generously their time, at the shop as well as on campus, and truly we couldn't do all that we do without our great volunteers.
That's a great opportunity for employment for your residents there, and a great way to, you know, continue to spread the mission further. Besides sweets, does the bakery offer anything like sandwiches? Can you get the new things?
Yeah, we have a variety of lunch items.
Yeah.
Chicken salad sandwiches are very popular, and we have some different kinds of sandwiches and wraps and fruit trays, veggie trays, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, fantastic. So this is located, this is the Sweetheart Shop, guys. It's a newer bakery. It's been around only a year, and it's really adorable. I haven't been there yet, though.
Well, you got to stop
my
in.
My car always goes to, well, I'm closer to the Rogers Park location, but I got to make it out to Glenview. Not too far. Glenview Road and Waukegan Road. There's parking. It's pretty convenient. And in the store, tell us the hours too. Can you, obviously, breakfast
sure,
and lunch?
Sure, yeah. So we're open Tuesday through Saturday. Tuesday through Friday, we're open 9 to 5, and Saturday's 8 to 4.
Mm-hmm. Now, besides the volunteers that are there for the young adults that work there that have the developmental and intellectual disabilities, what type of things are they learning from this environment? And tell us about a typical day there.
So the residents get in, you know, shortly after we open in the morning. So, you know, they work the register, so they're learning, you know, cash handling skills and customer service skills. as well as just kind of maintaining the shop as like any other shop would, you know, cleaning up and restocking. So we're learning all that and how to stock properly by, you know, facing products forward so the customers can see it. All those kind of little tidbits that we kind of take for granted when we go into the store, you know, they're learning how to do those things.
And when they're working there, they're gaining a lot of experience and knowledge to get them a job outside of even the bake shop. Is that the goal?
For many of them, it is the goal. Yeah, we've had a few folks who no longer work at the shop because they've gotten jobs, you know, outside of Misericordia's scope specifically, you know, in the stores like Played Against Sports and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, the goal is you know, to get them the best employment opportunities that we can. And some of our residents are better suited to working within our scope of things. This kind of working under more direction is more beneficial to them. And the ones that we can get out in more competitive, independent employment, you know, we shoot for that as best we can.
Yeah. You guys, and Misericordia has had a lot of success with that, as well known in and around the Chicagoland area and beyond even. Just a moment, a quick break. 20 years on the Gold Coast. We're going to have the author on in just a few moments. But first, we're talking to Chris. Chris, what is your last name? You're my surprise guest.
Kiefer.
My surprise mystery guest. Chris?
Kiefer is my
Kiefer?
Last name.
I'm sorry, I interrupted
Kiefer.
You again. I did it again.
No worries. Chris Kiefer.
Kiefer. Okay, it's like I'm cutting you off. Chris Kiefer is with the Sweetheart Shop located in Glenview. It's only been around for 1 year. You can go there and have a nice coffee, sandwiches, snacks, smoothies, drinks, and the best thing is the Misericordia Bakery, another location for the bakery. Everybody loves the brownies. Is that your number one seller?
It's definitely our signature item, for sure.
What's the number one seller in the bakery?
The brownie probably is, you know, the chocolate chip cookie, Irish soda bread, another big one.
Oh, yeah. And I love how it comes in a little tiny, you know, personal size soda bread. It's so adorable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're great.
So are the bake shops a really good moneymaker for Misericordia? Does it help keep the mission moving forward? Or is it really mostly to give these kids, these young people, you know, some tools and experiences they wouldn't normally find outside?
Yeah, the number one reason is definitely to give our residents meaningful employment and job opportunities. You know, Misericordia and Sister Rosemary, they're always – you know, looking to the future and ways to grow and better the opportunities that we can give them. As far as money making, I mean, yeah, we're doing pretty well. I mean, I think that's not the goal of it, though.
Right.
But, you know, we're getting good sales, and we're obviously trying to grow that like any other business. But our main goal is to provide better opportunities for our residents.
Well, Chris Kiefer, thanks so much for coming on the show. I loved having you as a mystery guest. Say hello to
fun to surprise you, though. Thanks so much.
And to Sister Rosemary for me. Keep up the good work. I'm looking forward to meeting you, Chris. I'm going to be heading in there shortly. I promise. I got to get
in. Keep an eye out for you.
It's been the year just, I can't believe how fast the year went by. It's the Sweetheart Shop located on Waukegan Road in Glenview, the southeast corner of Glenview Road and Waukegan Road. You don't want to miss that shop, especially with another holiday coming up, right, Chris? Valentine's Day.
That's right, Valentine's Day. Get ready. We have lots of gifts for your loved ones.
Yeah, I love the heart-shaped brownie. Thanks so much, Chris, for all you're doing. Say hello to Sister Rosemary.
Thank you, Dolly. Appreciate
everybody at Misericordia. Bye-bye now.
Will do. Thanks.
Good news, good guests, and at least one good laugh. The Dolly McCarthy Show.
Yeah, it's a good show.
The Dolly McCarthy Show.
All righty. Last but not least, my friend Louis Tabell is on the line. Louis, are you there? He's the author of 20 Years on the Gold Coast.
Hi, Dolly. Louis?
Hello.
How are you?
Fantastic. Finally, you're on the show.
We had some delays, didn't we?
You're so busy. You are
too.
Touring the country with your book.
I've had a lot of fun with it. It's a, you know, surprisingly long-lasting legs on this thing. You know, I mean, a lot of times books get published and, you know, they have their, you know, their big boom and then they kind of fade away. But these kind of books, I know, you know, the first hotel book was Hotel Babylon, and it was written, I think, in the 70s, and it had a big surge, and then it just went away. And then 15 years later, a bunch of hotel students at Michigan discovered it and gave it a whole new shelf life, you know. So it's kind of one of those things where it's been out, and I, you know, it had a great reception, then it died, and then I got invited to do the book signing, and then, you know, Midwest Beat, and then you. So it's just people keep sort of rediscovering it because the stories are, you know, they're timeless, really. You know, they're funny.
Right. Well, okay. For those of you that are tuning in now, earlier in the show, I really gave you a big introduction, Lewis. It's 20 years of working in Chicago's finest hotels. I love this. A lot of you know my grandfather was the doorman at the Drake for 50 years. So this really caught my eye.
That's unbelievable.
If my grandfather was alive, we'd have quite... Sorry? What's it?
And you know that I worked at the Drake for, you know, on two different tours of duty, as I say.
Tours of duty. And I was just, the Drake is our annual Christmas tree, and I kind of make it now a summer treat. In the summer months, it's kind of nice. It's not so crowded, and the tea is like half off. The tea's over the Drake. I just love the Drake and the history there. And so you worked there two tours of duty. So total, how many years at the Drake were you?
Five at the Drake, and it's funny because the department that I managed was, you know, the front of the house, the doorman and the bellman, and, you know, I oversaw the concierge and, you know, a lot of other stuff, the health club lounge and the VIP lounge, but they were certainly a central part of my administrative duties at the Drake. Had he been there, you know, he would have worked for me, you know, funny, and I know that we have mutual friends, because you've got doorman at the Drake that have been there for 45 years, you know, it's such a cool hotel. Why would you leave?
Yeah, 50 years, my grandfather, and the stories he would tell, my goodness. And so you were at the Drake for 5 years, but how long in the hotel business in Chicago? Total, 20 years?
You know, I put 20 years because I didn't want everyone to know how old I was. Really more like 30. It's really more like 30, you know, it really is.
How did you get
like
into the hotel business?
That's funny. I remember my best friend had dropped out of college, you know, and his mom was like, well, you got to do something, you know, so she made him go downtown all the way to the city and get a job in a hotel, we were kids, you know, we were like 19, 20 years old, and he says, oh, you know, you'd love this, and you should do this, so he's the one that sort of got me interested. I'd start visiting the city to hang out with him and pick him up, and I thought, gosh, and then he told me how much money those guys make, the doorman and the bellman at some of these hotels, and I was a college kid, and I'm like, man, I could flip burgers for 4 years and make, you know, $4 an hour or whatever, or I could get a really cool job in the city and make some money, and, you know, I thought it was a lot more exciting and fun, you know.
Yeah, and in your book, you know, so for those of you, okay, 20 Years on the Gold Coast, you can get the book on Amazon. I love, so in the book, you know, it's like there's, instead of chapters, he's got accounts of different celebrities, the coaches in there too. He's a celebrity, of course, in Chicago, but celebrities that you've experienced, you know, through the hotel. In one of them, talk about, you said, you know, you have a cool job. You thought that to yourself the day that Ringo Starr, you went to go check on Ringo Starr. Tell us about that experience.
That was neat. I got two run-ins with him, which was really neat because, you know, my mom was a Beatles fanatic. Like, she graduated high school in like 66, you know, right when they were just like, it's hard to really explain to people that don't understand the phenomena and, you know, the effect they had on art and culture and fashion. And so she was one of those, you know, kids you'd see with the beehives and the pointed rim glasses, like passing out at their concerts, right? So I listened to them my whole life, and they were like larger than life to me as a kid growing up. And I remember being told to go up to a certain room, and they didn't even prompt me ahead of time. They didn't say it was, you know, and that happens a lot, you know, because they want to keep it so on the down low if they can. Even from the employees. A lot of times it's the employees that are calling into the radio stations and telling them, yeah, how do you think people find out? I mean, you know, it's always someone in the hotel. So I go up and
was that ever you? Did you ever tell? Did you ever kiss and tell?
Never. Honest to goodness, I would never.
Not until you wrote the book.
And you don't get to stay in the business very long because they do figure out eventually, you know. And
right,
it's
so Ringo,
silly, you know.
So Ringo was at
Ringo
the Drake?
Opens the door. All right. He opens the door of the suite, and I'm like,
wow.
Just imagine how anyone would be, right?
Your jaw dropped, right?
And you're just like, no way, my mom's never going to believe this, right? So he was really cool, but you could tell he was in a hurry, you know, and I got to meet his beautiful wife. And, you know, I took him down, chatted with him, you know. and you know, got him out of the hotel as seamlessly as possible. This is a man that is pretty used to getting in and out of places quickly, you could tell, you know. But the funnier run-in was at the Ritz, when I was at the Ritz and he had finished a show. And funny in the sense of seeing two different sides of him, because he was so relaxed and nice at, you know, one at the first hotel. And at the second hotel, you know, he got out of his limo and there was just a crowd of paparazzi around him. And someone had, like, sort of nutsed into his wife really hard. And then he just exploded, right? You know, he just, you know, I won't repeat what he said, obviously, but I mean, he said, you know, I've been on the stage for 4 hours, get out of my way, basically. You know? So now, and I thought it was an interesting parallel, him particularly, because celebrities are just like anyone else, as you know, Dolly. They have good days, they have bad days, they have days where they want to interact and days where they just want to be left alone, you know. And to see those two sides of him was cool. If that was the only interaction I ever had with him, I would have thought, wow, he was a real, you know, ass, frankly. That's exactly what I would have thought. But seeing him previously and realizing in a normal situation, he's very normal. I mean, who wouldn't get pissed off if someone had, you know, ran into their wife and you know, so that was really interesting.
Especially when you just gave so much of yourself for 4 hours on stage, you really just need to come down from that, and people should be respectful of, I mean, at this point, but back then in the day, I mean, this paparazzi, that was kind of new, you know, like paparazzi to us, it's very normal. Sadly, and they live with it. But back then, I think the paparazzi for the Beatles was just unheard of. I can't imagine what they were going through. All right, let's move on. The Kennedys. What's been your experience with the Kennedys?
That was really cool. That was really – I felt privileged to have an uncomfortable but unique experience with Ted Kennedy on a couple occasions, and more touchingly, John John, which really was
you
cool
did?
To me. John, yeah, I sure did. He walked out of the hotel. He had a Perry Ellis suit on and a baseball cap backwards and a pair of gym shoes. I thought, I like this guy. You know? And he was so, you know.
Which hotel was that one? I'm always curious.
That was at the Ritz.
Okay.
Yeah, that was at the Ritz-Carlton. And I often hesitate to name the hotels, but it really doesn't matter. I don't think anyone's going to be shocked that, you know, John Kennedy once stayed at the Ritz 20 years ago or whatever, you know. But he was great, and he was really shockingly humble, you know. I mean, he looked you right in the eye. He talked. You felt like you knew him your whole life, and you kind of did, you know.
Yeah, and that famous smile, those adorable eyes. And did he look you in the eye?
Sure did.
Was he sincere?
Oh, absolutely.
You think he could have been our president?
I think that absolutely he could have been.
Yeah, that was such a sad tragedy. All right, I love Bruce Springsteen. Tell us about Bruce Springsteen. Then I want you to tell me what was the most memorable encounter you ever had. But how about Bruce Springsteen? Tell us about that encounter.
Springsteen was,
yeah, right.
You know,
the
you
boss.
Hear these stories about different celebrities and you know, Springsteen was what everyone would expect and hope that he would be. That's exactly what he was. Here's a guy that was arguably the biggest star in the world at that time. You know, it was a couple of years after Born in the USA and Tunnel Love. I mean, he was just as big as it gets, right? And he literally got out of his limo, and instead of avoiding the crowds, you know, he stayed and signed autographs for a line of people. We're talking about a guy that does famously long shows. And then to stay there at that hotel – at the front door and literally take pictures and sign autographs until everyone that was there. It took him over an hour, and he could have left at any time. And he sat there and it was really just a surreal experience, you know? And I thought, wow, I love him even more now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's good to hear about him. We love you, Bruce.
Yeah,
all right. How about what's been your most memorable, maybe favorite encounter?
Gosh, it's a tough one.
Then I'm going to ask you the weirdest one.
I didn't write the
one. Or maybe the most
one.
Awkward.
That's the funniest thing. This book is all fun stuff. I could have written an equally, like, unbelievable book, but I would never do it because it's really a wrong thing to do for people in my profession. But the most memorable encounter is, that's a tough one. I would have to go, believe it or not, with President Nixon. And I know that may shock people. My meeting of him and, you know, growing up in the 70s and the whole turmoil in Nam and watching him resign, he was like the most recognizable person on the planet at one time, you know. And
sure.
he had become an old man, and, you know, I happen to have known a lot about him because I'm into politics and history, and he seemed rather shocked that someone my age knew so much about him in detail as I was taking him to the room, you know, and he's kind of looking at me like, should I be worried or should I, you know, but I was really enthused to meet him, and, you know, he was so cool. He's like, do you have a camera? And I said, no, but I could get one. He says, well, go get the camera. You know, he waited for me to, you know, just some bellboy kid in college to go downstairs, get a camera, come up. He took a picture of me. I got his autograph. Then he does something unbelievable. He takes out a piece of paper. I write my autograph. A week later, he sends me a copy of his latest book in the mail a couple years before he died. So, you know, there was actual some correspondence. He saw me 3 hours later, Dolly, after meeting hundreds of people and remembered my name. This guy was still sharp as a tack. And it was just really weird to see him in that setting. I was alone in a suite with him and one Secret Service guy.
Wow. Wow.
That was
really
weird.
Yeah. Yeah. How, okay. I know, I think I heard that you met Muhammad Ali too.
Absolutely. That was, yeah. The famous, the most famous athlete in the world, probably before Jordan,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
And again, I'm a kid in the 70s in the living room watching these famous fights with my dad, you know, and to see him walk in and being from Chicago, you know, and stuff, and just watch. This guy was as big as a refrigerator. People don't realize how big he was. I mean, his fists looked like canned hams, you know. But this was during the onset of his Parkinson's, and he had converted to Islam in a serious way. And, you know, but I checked him and took him up to his room. And this was an uncomfortable situation because I asked him for his autograph, naturally. And his Parkinson's had gotten so bad that he couldn't sign the paper. I mean, how bad it was. And I'm standing there just like, really uncomfortable at this point. And his wife's kind of glaring at me, and I'm like, I had no idea. So what he did, being the man that he is, he reached into his pocket and pulled out three already signed autographs because he knew people were going to ask him. He knew he couldn't even sign his name anymore. So he carried around pre-signed little autograph cards for people. And then now he looks me in the eye and puts up his fist like in a mock little – and I said I wouldn't have fought this guy for all the whiskey in Ireland, you know?
Oh, we miss him. Chris Farley.
Yeah.
Funniest man I ever knew. Period. That's what Adam Sandler said. How about you? Was he funny off camera?
Yeah. I mean, one of my good friends, like Riley, went to school with him. That's kind of how I became acquainted with him. And he would come into the hotel to see Riley. So I got to know him through Mike. And he was a local musician in Chicago that you probably have heard of him. You know, Farley would come into the hotel as crazy as you see him on TV, as crazy as you see him, like, yelling and screaming so loud that, like, your hair is moving kind of stuff, you know. And then he would come into the lobby of a 4-star hotel and just pick me up and twirl me around his shoulders, and, like, security would come and stuff. And this was before he was even famous, you know. And they would ask, who was that guy? And I said, he was just some crazy street person, you know, because I didn't want to tell him he was someone that I knew, you know. And he would just be gone, and no one doubted that he was a crazy street person. He looked like a crazy street person, you know. So that was really sad. I remember Mike calling me, you know, the day that he got the news about him passing. And what was strange is I was literally next door at the Ritz-Carlton working there. You know, he lived at the Hancock and had been invited to that party that he was at that he did the overdose of drugs at, you know. And I had
you
a pregnant
were invited
wife at
to
home
that party?
Oh, sure. I mean, and I had a pregnant wife at home. I went home. You know, I knew what Chris was like. And, you know, so, but gosh, you know, we used to, yeah, this, because we, you know, I remember when I met Chris, he was just at SCTV. He was just, Second City downtown. He wasn't even famous yet. And Mike told me that's going to be the next big thing in comedy, I promise you. And I'm thinking, well, that's very optimistic because there's a lot of people who try to get into entertainment. Sure enough, you know, he got signed to SNL. Mike was out of his mind happy. We just couldn't believe it. You know what I mean? So yeah, that wasn't on, you know, before he was famous, you know, you know, we used to tear up Rush Street pretty badly, you know.
Wow. Wow. And a lot of people know Chris Farley grew up, was it in Wisconsin? He went to Marquette, but I wasn't sure where he grew up. Was it Chicago? The Chicagoland area?
No.
Or was it Wisconsin?
No, he grew up in Wisconsin. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And just spent a lot of time here. It was like a second home to him, you know. He bought a place here because he wanted to be close to home, I'm guessing, but not, you know, in a small town either, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So sad. That's definitely a void that we all feel, all our Chris Farley fans. So tell us, is there any awkward moments with celebrities? You had something going on with Drew Barrymore. Not you and her, but, you know, something happened with Drew Barrymore.
Yeah.
Was that one of the awkward moments, or is there something?
That was uncomfortable. That was probably the most uncomfortable moment that I've ever had with a celebrity, because it was really intense. And even though it wasn't directed at me, the tension in that room and the hostility was really kind of like, wow. And the weirdest thing was that, you know, she walked in and, you know, she's just the most charming, like, disarming person. You know, she's smiling at everyone. And you're thinking, well, she's just another celebrity. But there was something particular about her personality. And I'm not like a huge Drew Barrymore fan, but I was shocked at the presence she carried with herself. It was something unusual. And, you know, I went up to her room a couple of minutes after just to check and make sure everything was good with her, which was pretty customary in those type of hotels. And as the door opened, you know, I heard her just she was really lividly laying into her assistant about, you know, because she's a huge animal rights activist. And she saw some little plaque on the desk that advertised for furs on Michigan Avenue. Every five-star hotel has those plaques in their hotel, you know. So she refused to stay with us, you know, and I walked in and then I turned the corner and she's kind of like, oh, you know, there's someone here kind of deal. And she was, you know, she was never, you know, she was just a passionate person about her beliefs. And she was really like angry that they would associate her with something like that. She was really and sincerely offended, you know. She wasn't trying to be mean or anything. Then she checked out and went to a hotel across the street that has the same sign on the desk, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, but I'm sure her people gave them a heads up. And I always wondered, why didn't they do that for us? You know, when Paul McCartney was at the Ritz, we literally had to move any leather furniture that would be within his eyesight. I mean, can you imagine that?
Wow.
No leather couches, no nothing, you know. But that's just the stuff you do for some of these celebrities. It's incredibly it's another world, you know. These folks live in a literally another world.
Yeah. Well, somebody, Bono, took a cab in Chicago instead of jumping in his limo.
That was another favorite. And how cool, Dolly, right? How lucky, right? If I say in the book, I feel like the Forrest Gump of the hotel business without the super low IQ, you know, because I'm just always in these weird, it's just dumb luck, you know, I just happen to be. So I'm working and Bono's staying there. And again, someone from the hotel must have called because there was 100 kids outside the hotel knowing that Bono was there. And instead of dodging these kids out and like taking the back door, he was ordering pizzas and like sending them out to the kids, you know, and it was really cool to see that. And then he breaks the line. You know, he's ready to go to a show at Soldier's Field. There's, I don't know how many tens of thousands of people waiting for him. He breaks the line, signs autographs for like 20, 30 minutes. He's late for the show. He skips the limousine, jumps in the cab, you know, and goes to Soldier's Field. And I talked to the cabbie later. He's a buddy of mine. And he said, yeah, he was really nice. He asked about the local economy and crime, and very humble. And, you know, and the coolest thing is, Dolly, when I was, because I know you like to go to Ireland and you promote these cool trips there. And I was, when I was in Ireland, I stayed at the Clarence, which is off the Guinness River there in Dublin. And U2 owns that hotel. And I don't have to tell you that the Irish really don't give two hoots about celebrity. They really don't. So they were just in the bar hanging out, you know. And that's kind of how I made a connection with him. Because when I saw him in Chicago later and he was surrounded, I said, you know, I really enjoyed your hotel in Dublin. Then he stopped and looked at me and wanted to talk to me and stuff. So that was really neat, you know.
That's really neat. I was just at Bono's town. I can't remember the name of the town. Isn't it terrible? But he said Bono lives down the street, and I'm at the Fitzgerald pub. And I said, really? And he comes in this pub. He just walks in, sits down. He's just a regular dude, and everyone treats him like such. That could never happen in Chicago, though. You know,
no,
so
that's the
What you know, what's really neat is also, you know, the kind of glitz and glamour, the excitement of staying in a hotel. I think that there's something about staying at a hotel in Chicago. You know, it's a real treat for people to do that. Even there's a lot of people that take staycations. Out of all the hotels, I mean, I'm getting off the celebrity stuff right now, but out of all the hotels, what was the what do you think is the most Hollywood glamorous hotel? And then I want to ask, which hotel you think is most popular for celebrities to go to? Well, back in the day, probably, and then today maybe different.
Well,
who knows? I think the Conrad Hilton is still
yeah,
a very
I think back
hotel.
In the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's like an iconic Chicago hotel. You know, you've got the helicopter landing pad on top of the roof. JFK flew into that when he did the Great Debate. You know, the Elton John stayed in. I think that's one of the most expensive suites in the Midwest at one point. I mean, So, I mean, that's got its own place. But back when I first started, there weren't that many four-star hotels in the city, and people find that shocking. There was no, you know, there wasn't a Peninsula Hotel. You know, there wasn't a Four Seasons. You know, there wasn't the Langham Hotel, and the Trump Hotel, all these. You know, these are recent additions to the luxury market historically, you know what I mean? But there were still a handful, and I just happened to have worked at them all, you know. But to answer your question, I'd say if you're the most famous person in the world, like Brad Pitt or Angelina Jolie, together, when they were together and they came to Chicago, they stayed at the Peninsula. That hotel was specific, and everyone knows that. That's not a big secret. You know, they stayed there for a period of time. And the Peninsula was built to accommodate that type of celebrity, where they literally have ways to get into
secret,
the hotel and private elevators up to direct suites.
Yeah.
So I would say that if you don't want anyone to know you're in Chicago, the best you could do is it would be probably at
the Peninsula
these days.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is there any hotel in particular that you have the most celebrity sightings? If they want to be seen. Now, if you're a celebrity, it's not the most famous in the world, but you want to be seen. Where would you go? Where do they stay?
I would say that it's probably hard to say. They're going to stay in the North Loop. You know, they're going to stay in the North Loop. But like when Tom Cruise came to town, he got a floor at the Lake Point Towers. He didn't even want a deal. Some of those people don't even have to stay in hotels. Of course, they can just rent private luxury condos and stuff and things like that. But I'd say anything north, you know, anything north of Ohio up to about the Drake, those five or six iconic famous hotels, that's where you'll see them, generally speaking. But it's so weird. It's like when Oprah would walk down the street when she had the condo at the Ritz, and she would literally walk by people without her makeup and her hair done, and people wouldn't recognize her. And she would wink at us and say, "Don't you dare." And she would walk right down the street, and people would not even turn to look at her because they think, well, that couldn't possibly be Oprah, you know. I remember Michael Jordan got off the elevator at one of the hotels, and he walked by the bar. And you could see everyone lift their head up for a second, like, wow, that looks like Michael Jordan. But they just went back to their drink because they were like, no, it's not Michael Jordan, you know. And,
yeah,
and sure enough, when he came back, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they have to exist somewhere, you know.
Wow.
So
we had to wrap the show soon, but
I love
finally having you on the show. What a really cool book this is. Lots of interesting stories here, and it's a great piece of Chicago history too. All the famous people that have come and gone in some of our finest hotels. What made
you
write
Doug, before you let me go, you know, the coolest thing is it has gotten into some celebrity hands. You know, it really has. It's gotten into Stephen Colbert's hands. And I could name drop some others, but there's four or five very recognizable ones. And there is a screenplay in the work. So who knows, you know, who knows?
Wow. Hey, that
is
really something. All right. Well, keep us posted on that. I'm excited for you, Lewis. The book is called 20 Years.
I appreciate you having me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you for being so patient and my show being to be on my show of all shows. Jeez. First of all, it is 20 Years on the Gold Coast. It's a great book. Pick it up on Amazon. Where else can we find the book, Lewis?
You know, I'm exclusively on Amazon. They've been really good to me. So
it's a funny, easy read too, about the rich, the poor, the famous, and the infamous. Lewis takes you through 20 years of working in Chicago's finest hotels. Lewis, thanks again so much, and best of luck with the book. Continued success, I should say. And thanks again for coming
on
the show.
Thanks, Dolly.
Thank you. Great having Lewis on the show and Ms. Recordia. Thanks, everybody, for tuning into The Good Show. I will see you next week. Happy New Year. And come on by the Harp and Fiddle tonight. Love to see you. Learn more about this trip to Ireland in November. So long, everybody.
Good news, good guests, and at least one good laugh. The Dolly McCarthy Show.
Yeah, it's a good show.
The Dolly McCarthy Show.